KUOW podcasts are made possible by listener support. Become a new or renewing member today at KUOW.org.
From 94.9 KUOW Seattle, this is Weekday. I'm Marcy Silman. Seattle area is a food lover's haven, a gourmet delight, and that's true about everything from handmade pasta to gourmet ice cream. But sometimes you just crave a visit from the ice cream truck. What is your taste of summer when it comes to frozen delights? Is it an ice pop, a creamsicle, or maybe you do love that gourmet ice cream? We'd love for you to email us now, weekday@kuow.org, and we're going to talk more about it later this hour. The U.S. Senate kept up its spirit of bipartisanship last week. It passed a college loan bill by an overwhelming majority. Over in the House, Republican lawmakers voted to use their votes this fall to block any funding for the president's Affordable Care Act. Meanwhile, Congress is just about to recess for the summer. Work is still on the table. Jill Jackson joins us once again. She's Capitol Hill producer for CBS News. Good morning, Jill.
Good morning, Marcy.
So are lawmakers just counting down, or do they actually have any priorities for work this week?
You know, I was just saying to a colleague, I do not remember July where it was the last week before an August recess where it was this slow.
Oh, no.
Normally we're working weekends. There's some, you know, 2 years ago it was the debt limit. This time they're kind of leaving town with a whimper and will be gone for more than 4 weeks. They, you know, will be in session. The House will be in session for just 13 days between now and the end of September when government funding runs out. So they're going to come back and there will be very little time and a very packed agenda.
Well, the president has launched his public relations campaign for his economic agenda, and there is a lot of buzz, I guess, that he's generating about the deadlines for all kinds of fiscal activity. So what is Congress doing, if anything, about that?
Well, at the moment, the big one will be right when they get back, and that's that government funding. If the House and Senate are unable to reach a deal on government spending for fiscal year 2014, then the government will shut down after September 30th. Now, this is something we've seen many times before with the same sort of makeup in the House with run by the Republicans and the Senate Democrats ruling over on the Senate side. And it's never pretty. So at the moment, normally Congress passes appropriations bills that fund each government agency. So you have the defense bill, you have the labor bill, you have, you know, HUD. And those bills, while both sides have been working towards some sort of compromise on each chamber, there's been no, they haven't passed a single appropriations bill that's been able to be signed by the president yet. So it's very unlikely that we will have that regular order to fund the government next year. They'll likely need more of a short-term continuing resolution, as they've been doing, to just keep the government funded at current levels. But that's not going to be pretty either, because everyone wants to have some conditions in there. Senate Republicans, including Marco Rubio, have said that they want to defund Obamacare, in that Democrats are going to want to bring some sort of sequester replacement to the table to avoid the 2014 sequester cuts. So it's going to be quite the battle when they get back in order to avoid that government shutdown.
You mentioned what the Senate Republicans had to say about defunding the Affordable Care Act, and that was sort of the gauntlet that they threw down just as the president was leaving on this national tour of speeches.
Right. That's true. And they, at this moment, I mean, I think this is where negotiations begin, is they see that, you know, there's going to be this major deadline. And so, unfortunately, how Congress works is they work, you know, they tend to actually start getting their work done as deadlines approach. But they also start from a position that's very far apart.
You know, we're talking with Jill Jackson of CBS News. It's interesting to hear you say that they could all become journalists as well, working on a deadline. The other big issue that we've heard bubbling back and forth is immigration. And mm-hmm. we know that earlier in the summer, the Senate passed a strongly bipartisan bill with a lot of support, went over to the House, and Speaker Boehner said, you know, we're not going to take up your bill. But it seemed like the House was considering different portions or at least some approaches to doing something about immigration reform.
Right. That's right. And the Judiciary Committee in the House has continued its work on a bill that would grant citizenship for what are called the Dreamers, so young immigrants who were brought here by their parents. It was not their choice to come here illegally, and now they, in many ways, feel like they are just as American and are just as American as anybody else. A lot of House Republicans are coming around on that, but in the past week we had a very big embarrassment for the Republican Party when Steve King, the congressman from Iowa, who is definitely the strictest Republican in terms of being anti-legalization for any immigrants, made a comment to a news organization saying that for every valedictorian among those Dreamers, there are 150 who are crossing the border with calves the size of cantaloupes bringing drugs across the border. This created, so much drama that even Speaker Boehner himself felt like he had to publicly condemn King's comments, and that did occur on Thursday last week. And Eric Cantor also piled on in terms of trying to distance the Republican Party. And I think that GOP leaders really feel like they have to, anytime something offensive like that is said, they need to jump on and prevent that from happening. Now, the question is, in August, when members are back in their districts, will we see more of this? More members saying things that could garner national attention that the Republicans in leadership feel like they need to tamp down. I don't know, but I know that it's something that concerns the top leaders, and it's something that it's very important to Speaker Boehner that it look like Republicans are really seriously trying to find an immigration solution. He says he really truly wants one. He's been trying to lay the groundwork for one. And while it may not go as far as the Senate bill does, it's something that is a priority for him, he says. Anytime anyone makes a comment like that, it makes the job more difficult.
You mentioned, Jill, when we started speaking, that this is the slowest late July that you can remember in quite some time. Mm-hmm. What major issue are they avoiding besides all the small ones that we've talked about?
The debt limit. Like I said, 2 years ago, it was a 24/7 debt limit negotiations, and that is one that is going to really be dominating the fall. In addition to the government keeping the government open, Secretary Jack Lew, the Treasury Secretary, said on the Sunday talk shows yesterday that he said that they have enough money to not reach the debt limit through Labor Day. But after that, it's dicey. I hear from House Republicans that they think they could stretch it all the way to November, but we don't have a hard deadline. And maybe that's a good thing, because when you miss the actual deadline, often, that we can see the stock market react in a negative way. It sends a horrible message to the world. So in some ways, what I see the public leaders doing right now is trying to keep the deadline a little murky to give them as much wiggle room as possible. But again, the two sides are starting from very different places on the debt limit. The president has said publicly many times he will not negotiate this time around. He wants a clean debt ceiling increase. He's not going to hold it hostage to GOP demands. Senator Harry Reid, the majority leader in the Senate, has said the same. But Speaker Boehner over in the House said that the Boehner rule should stand this time as well. And what that is for every dollar that the debt limit is increased, you cut a dollar of spending. So he reiterated that demand this time. That was his demand in the last round. And that's where things get really complicated, because as we saw with the debt limit deal that created the super committee and the sequester and all of this mess, it's really not easy to cut a lot of spending. And it's a big fight. The two sides are so far apart in terms of what priorities deserve funding and what don't. And so that is really going to make it difficult, especially when you're starting from a place where the Democrats are saying they absolutely will not negotiate, and the Republicans won't give that debt ceiling unless they get those spending cuts.
Sounds like it's going to heat up quite a bit in September when they're back after Labor Day. Jill, thank you for taking time to talk to us today.
Absolutely.
Jill Jackson joined us once again. She's Capitol Hill producer for CBS News. This is Weekday. I'm Marcy Silman.
#9:17 Bradley Manning is the Army private accused of leaking thousands of classified documents. Whistleblower or traitor? His court-martial is nearing its end. A verdict is expected soon. How soon? We'll find out in a minute.
Support for KUOW comes from Laird Norton Wealth Management, celebrating 75 years of King County Parks by establishing the King County Parks Foundation, devoted to strengthening families and connecting communities for generations to come. Information on contributing at ourparksourfuture.org.
It's cloudy in Seattle this morning, currently at 59 degrees. The forecast says the clouds are going to go away. It's going to be sunny this afternoon, and we should hit a high of 72. Ice cream sandwiches? Frozen mochi? Popsicles? What's your favorite frozen treat? Think about it. I know it might be a difficult decision, but give it some thought and get ready to call in 15 minutes from now.
From KUOW Seattle, I'm Marcy Silman. For the past several months, we've followed the travails of Edward Snowden, the so-called NSA leaker. Snowden's quest for political asylum has overshadowed the court-martial of Bradley Manning, the 25-year-old Army private accused of leaking thousands of classified documents to WikiLeaks. Those documents included everything from 250,000 diplomatic cables to secret reports on the progress of the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. Manning's defense attorneys have called him a whistleblower, a humanist, somebody with a cause. Prosecutors say he's a traitor. Attorneys for both sides gave closing arguments in court last week. Joining us to talk more about Bradley Manning's court-martial is Ed Pilkington. He's chief reporter for The Guardian U.S., and he's been closely following the proceedings. Thanks for joining us today.
Hi, good to be with you.
Bradley Manning faces 21 charges. The most serious carries the death penalty. Can you explain what that charge is and what are some of the lesser charges?
Yeah, the most serious charge is this aiding the enemy charge, which, as you say, carries the death penalty. It is a capital charge. The prosecution has made clear that they don't intend to press that they're going to go instead for the maximum sentence other than execution, which is still very, very swinging. It's a possible life sentence in military custody, but with no chance of parole. So that is the most serious charge that possible sentence that Manning faces. On top of that, he faces a total of 21 counts, which, if you add them all together, comes up to 154 years in military custody. So he's facing a possible life sentence plus 154 years in jail.
Private Manning did plead guilty to some of those charges, didn't he?
Yeah, well, it's a little bit more complicated than that. He pleaded guilty to lesser versions of many of the, of actually 10 of the counts. So he accepted some parts of what he was being accused of, but pleaded not guilty to other parts. In essence, he's admitted to being the source of the massive WikiLeaks trove of disclosures in 2010. They came to more than 700,000 documents that he passed on to WikiLeaks, and which were then published partly by The Guardian and other international news organizations and partly by WikiLeaks itself. So he's admitted to doing that, to transmitting the documents, but he is not admitted, he's pleaded not guilty to this big charge, aiding the enemy, to helping essentially Al-Qaeda and Osama bin Laden, which he totally rejects that allegation.
Part of that charge stems from the fact that, as I understand it, documents were found in at least in the house where Osama bin Laden was killed by U.S. forces. Is that correct?
That's correct. When the U.S. Navy SEALs went into the compound, Osama bin Laden's compound in Abbottabad in 2011, they took out with them three items of digital media. That's how it's put. One imagines they're probably DVDs or CDs. And on them, they found a letter from Osama bin Laden to one of his Al-Qaeda aides, in which he asked the aide to go out and find from the internet some of the WikiLeaks disclosures, particularly the Afghan war logs, and also some of the diplomatic cables, the U.S. embassy cables, that Manning transmitted to WikiLeaks. And then there was a reply from that aide in which the aide attached those documents, the U.S. embassy cables and the Afghan war logs. So the prosecution said that that was evidence that Osama bin Laden personally and al-Qaeda more generally made use of the disclosures that Manning made to WikiLeaks, and that that was seminal in their argument that he aided the enemy.
We're talking with the Guardian U.S. chief reporter Ed Pilkington. What's curious when you read about the closing arguments of both the defense and the prosecution is the vastly different way that both sides depict Bradley Manning. His attorneys talk about him as a whistleblower, uncovering wrongdoing. The prosecutors paint him pretty much, if not the devil, as somebody with malice aforethought who joined the military with the express purpose of bringing down the U.S. government. It's a curious battle of words.
Absolutely. That's very well put. And I think it goes to the very heart of why this case is so really seminal at this moment in American politics and journalism and the media generally. There was set up over last Thursday and last Friday. We had the prosecution spent a day first, and then the defense rebutted that. What was set up was a sort of epic picture of modern American opinion towards someone who leaks official information. Now, this is seminal because, you know, think of Edward Snowden and the NSA story that we at The Guardian have been publishing over the last month. You know, he faces exactly the same monumental disagreement within America about what an official leaker does. On the one hand, you get this picture from the government that this guy was seeking fame. He was a traitor, in essence. He was a traitor, and they use that word several times. He had no allegiance to the American flag. His aim was to damage and to harm America. On the other hand, you had the defense, and I think they reflected a much wider opinion of Manning's supporters, who are very vocal in this case, which presented him as a whistleblower, as a hero, as someone who wanted to spark a debate within America about the cost of war. Now, you know, somewhere between these two pictures, America has to settle on what is the truth about a whistleblower or an official leaker. And that's why the verdict that we're going to hear tomorrow at 1 o'clock from the judge in this case could have very, very far-reaching ramifications that you know, could have implications for the media, for investigative journalism, for officials who are concerned about what they're finding out about the actions of their government. That could last for many, many years.
There's a couple things I want to follow up on there, but first is WikiLeaks itself, because there seems to be at play here the notion of what is a real journalistic outlet, if you will. For example, it's fine. It would have been better if he leaked it to the New York Times, these documents, than if he leaked it to WikiLeaks.
Yeah, that's also incredibly important, I think. I mean, it's partly important for reality's sake. We know, we learned during the trial that Manning actually tried to leak to the New York Times and to the Washington Post. But when he called those newspapers, he failed to get a reporter who could listen to him at the other end of the line. So having failed to do that, he then went and approached WikiLeaks. So it kind of almost happened. He almost did leak to an established news organization. But it's also important because the prosecution has made clear during the trial that even if Manning had leaked to the New York Times, they would still have pursued the soldier, the leaker, with as much aggression, as much vengeance, his supporters think, as they have done. And that's why if he's found guilty of aiding the enemy tomorrow, that has implications not just for WikiLeaks, not just for Manning himself, who could spend the rest of his life in jail, but for journalism in general. It could, in a sense, send a chill across investigative journalism, which relies on people with a conscience in official circles who are finding stuff out that they find disturbing, to come forward and to disclose it to the media. And if there's a chill that's put on that, right across that kind of activity, that relationship between the whistleblower and the news organization, that could also have very serious consequences.
You mentioned that Judge Denise Lind will announce a verdict tomorrow. It's her verdict. There is no jury in this case. Why not?
Well, Manning himself decided to go with just a judge, a military judge, presiding over him and giving the verdict. He could have had a panel of peers. They would have been sort of military officers and soldiers, which is a sort of court-martial, the military equivalent of a jury. But he decided in the end to put his faith into this one military judge. Now, that I think is a pretty large roll of the dice.
Mm-hmm.
It's a big gamble, and we'll see tomorrow whether it paid off. You know, as was the idea of him pleading guilty to lesser versions of the charges that we discussed earlier, that was also a big gamble. He did it independently. He didn't do it as a plea bargain, which would be the normal way of doing things. He did it of his own volition. He just wanted to admit that he was the leaker, and he got nothing back for it. That was also another big gamble. So he's taken a couple of really unusual legal steps here with the advice of his main lawyer, David Coombs, a civilian lawyer. And we'll find out tomorrow whether that was an inspired piece of legal footwork or something that hasn't paid off for him.
We are talking about the court-martial trial of Bradley Manning with Ed Pilkington of Guardian U.S. This week, the U.S. government said it was not going to seek the death penalty for Edward Snowden. How is Snowden's case different from Bradley Manning's?
Well, I think the first thing to say is that the two are very closely attached, and they're attached because Edward Snowden himself has been watching what's happened to Bradley Manning incredibly closely. He said as much to us, The Guardian, when he talked to us in Hong Kong. He said he's seen what's happened to Manning, particularly the very harsh treatment that Manning received when he was in a Marine jail in Quantico in Virginia, which the UN likened to a form of torture. He's watched that, and he's decided that because of that, he feels that he can't feel confident that he would be given a fair trial were he to come back to America. So in a sense, what has happened to Manning has informed Snowden's decision to go on the international run. The fact that he's now stuck in legal limbo in Russia is really a direct output of what the treatment that Manning has been given. In the longer term, again, what happens tomorrow, particularly this aiding the enemy count, whether Manning is found guilty or not guilty of aiding the enemy, could have huge implications for Snowden, because if Manning is found guilty of aiding the enemy, it could be quite probable that Snowden, were he ever to be apprehended and brought back to America, would also face the same charge. It's one of only two charges under military uniform code of justice that can be applied to civilians. So anybody, any American citizen, whether you're in the army or not, can be prosecuted for aiding the enemy. If a precedent is set tomorrow, anyone who leaks information that is put on the internet could be found guilty of aiding the enemy. So it has really, really wide ramifications, I think.
Even if he's not found guilty tomorrow of aiding the enemy, because he has pled guilty to lesser versions of some of these charges, it sounds as if he will spend some time in a military prison.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, if Manning walks out of court tomorrow, I will personally eat my hat, as will, I think, everyone else who's followed this case closely. There's no chance at all of him coming out tomorrow. The big question beyond, I think, the aiding the enemy account, which we've discussed, the big question is how many years will he serve in prison? And that will come later, because as soon as the judge has given her verdict, we will step into a final sentencing phase. And that could last some time. It could last several days or even 2 or 3 weeks, because particularly the defense will want to bring in a whole new raft of witnesses in which they will present Manning as someone who was an emotionally troubled person but well-intentioned, and they will be doing everything they can to mitigate the guilty verdict and to reduce it. In other words, take down his verdict and try and get him as little time in military custody as possible.
How quickly would that sentencing hearing take place?
Well, it will start immediately, but then both sides, both prosecution and defense, will want to call their own witnesses. So it's going to be like another whole mini trial. And it could, you know, we're not quite sure, to be honest. It could take 3 or 4 days, or it could take 2 or 3 weeks. And at the end of it, again, sitting on her own, the judge, Colonel Delise Lind, will give a sentence for each count to which he's been found guilty, and then we'll add it up, and we'll know, you know, the full horror, if it goes that way, of the fate that Bradley Manning faces.
That's quite a weighty responsibility on one person's shoulders, Judge Lind.
It is. I mean, I'm struck by how much is on her shoulders, not just the verdict, but also the sentencing. And bearing in mind that this case has generated probably more paperwork, more pages of documents than any other military trial in U.S. history. Not least, there have been the 700,000 documents that Manning disclosed. But on top of that, there's been a complete mountain of legal argument and to-ing and fro-ing and court transcripts. And she has a ginormous job to do.
This court-martial has come to a climax, and yet Edward Snowden has gotten the bulk of American media attention. Why has Manning's court-martial been overshadowed at this point?
Well, I think it's a combination of sort of James Bond with the weaknesses of the American media. And what do I mean by that? I mean, James Bond, the Edward Snowden story, has been a classic individual narrative of someone fleeing, being on the run, going to Hong Kong and then Moscow. I mean, it's had everything that 24-hour cable news requires to sustain a story. So, you know, it's not surprising, I think, that the media has sort of gone over time in portraying Snowden's personal story. But the weakness, I think, is also really important, and that is I don't think the media has really cottoned on to, maybe even now, and if they're getting it now, it's kind of very late in the day, the huge significance of what's happening here in terms of the potential precedents that are being set and the potential chill that's being put on investigative journalism in America. And the other weakness, you know, that the personal story hasn't been here for them to sort of latch onto with Manning. He's kept quiet. He hasn't given any interviews since he was arrested in May 2010. He's kept his head down, and he hasn't been kind of feeding the media with the kind of material that makes it easy for them to cover a story like this. So I think there has been a kind of weakness in media coverage that's been exposed by this case.
Ed Pilkington, thanks for taking time to explain this to us.
Pleasure. Thanks a lot.
Ed Pilkington is chief reporter for The Guardian U.S. He's been covering Private Bradley Manning's court-martial, and the verdict will be announced tomorrow afternoon by Judge Denise Lind in Maryland. Thank you so much. This is Weekday.
Nine 34. When the summer heat kicks in, what is your go-to frozen treat? Has your preference changed since you were a kid? Let us know by calling 206-543-5869. We want to hear from you. What's your favorite summertime frozen treat? 206-543-5869. We're going to cool things off here in a minute on KUOW 94.9 Seattle.
Join KUOW for the Moth Seattle Story Slam monthly series, featuring true stories told live and judged by audience members. The August Story Slam theme is Wanderlust and takes place Thursday, August 1st at Fremont Abbey Arts Center. Learn more on the events page at KUOW.org.
60 degrees in Seattle, still cloudy. Forecast still calls for sun this afternoon and a high today in the low 70s. Overnight, it'll be partly cloudy with a low of 57, and tomorrow, Tuesday, kind of like today, cloudy in the morning, then sunny in the afternoon, but a little warmer. Tomorrow's high, 77. 9:35, I'm Bernard Ouellette. The FBI says this weekend it made 150 arrests and rescued over 100 children in an operation targeting child prostitution. We'll have more on that in the news at 10.
From KUOW, this is Weekday. I'm Marcy Silman. I scream, you scream, we all scream for ice cream. Nothing says summer better than a frozen dessert on a stick made at home, fruity, creamy, but cold and refreshing, most important of all. When I was a kid in Detroit, the sound of the ice cream truck triggered a Pavlovian response. We would all run down the street from wherever we were playing, and we'd study the colored chart that was pasted on the outside of the little white van. Would we choose an orange creamsicle, a fudgicle, or my personal favorite, the toasted coconut-covered vanilla ice cream on the wooden stick, and sometimes it had chocolate at the center. I'm not sure if it really was chocolate, but it looked like chocolate. Your taste may be more refined when it comes to frozen desserts. We'd love to hear your vote for the top frozen taste of summer. Email us weekday at kuow.org or give a call 206-543-KUOW, 543-5869, 1-800-289-5869. And our email weekday at kuow.org. Tim in Seattle says, my favorite frozen treat is actually homemade. I like to take marshmallow spread, put it on a stick, coat it with peanut butter, then roll it in crushed coffee beans, and then I freeze it. It's magnificent. If it's just me eating, I like to also roll these things in jalapenos. Woo! But then I've always squeezed hot peppers into my coffee, says Tim. Sam in Crown Hill says, I've been gobbling up six strawberries popsicles. That's actually a brand at Seattle Farmers Markets this summer. I saw them mentioned in City Arts magazine, and then I went to the Broadway market to try a bite. I've gone back every week, locally made, local produce, and no milk. Well, that sounds good. Our producer, our lead producer, Katie Sewell, is just back from a sojourn in the hot, hot European continent. It was very hot and muggy there, right?
So hot. Well, it ended hot. By the time we got to London, of course, they were breaking records left and right. A place, London, no air conditioning there. No air conditioning whatsoever. So you can imagine that the Alliance for Gelato were around the block, not to mention, you know, the extraordinary prices for ice water.
So I guess just a glass of ice water would be the favorite frozen treat when you're panting like a dog.
Yes, that's what I was looking for. My mother, however, did like to stand in the gelato lines and wait.
Wow.
I'm a little more impatient. I do love a good cookies and cream. So I can be tempted out for that.
Do they eat cookies and cream in England?
I found some in Paris. I didn't find any in England.
What kind of cookies do they use in Paris?
Same thing, Oreos.
Really?
Yeah. Same thing.
Oreo.
I know, but that was the big deterrent for me in England, because I never did find cookies and cream, and that's really the one that draws me out. However, I thought we ended in New York, as you well know, and I thought that would be my respite. But no, yeah, if you've been paying attention to the news, you know that New York is having record-breaking heat as well, hundred degrees, humid, and so that had me searching for a Mr. Softee truck, which is famous New York Mr. Softee, and just to be nostalgic, because, you know, I am the old radio person. I pulled this old ad for Mr. Softee.
The creamiest, creamiest frosted cream you get from Mr. Softee. For refreshing delight supreme, look for Mr. Softee.
My milkshakes and my sundaes and my cones are such a treat. Listen for my store on wheels jingling down the street.
The creamiest, creamiest frosted cream you get from Mr. Softee. For refreshing delight supreme, look for Mr. Softee. S-O-F-T-E-E, Mr. Softee.
Okay, did you find Mr. Softee, Katie?
I did find Mr. Softee, but never when I was looking for him. It was always, I'd pass the truck when I was already full, and then when I was looking for one, I couldn't find him. I will say, though, that in New York City, they're getting a little more health conscious, and frozen yogurt trucks are giving Mr. Softee a run for his money these days. So,
well, I think that's fine. We have all kinds of people with all kinds of special frozen treats. We did send our weekday high students out a few summers ago, and they went around to local ice cream shops in the Seattle area, and they asked people about their favorite frozen flavors.
Here comes Mr. Softee, the soft ice cream man.
The creamiest, creamiest soft ice cream you get from it.
So being around ice cream so much, what's your favorite flavor?
My favorite flavor that we have at the moment is not ice cream, but rather the raspberry mint sorbet. Though I'm also partial to the honey lavender and coffee.
It would be Reese's peanut butter cups with caramel and walnuts.
Huckleberry, tied with gooey cluster. It's gooey, a little chunky at times.
So, what's the craziest ice cream you can think of?
Steak and pickle.
That's a
Ew. Steak and pickle ice cream. That's a weird one.
That would be a weird one.
My name is Clay Franklin. I'm the owner of Half Pint Homemade Ice Cream. I've got chocolate peanut butter. I have ginger. I have raspberry sorbet, which is with raspberries from one of the farms here, Hayton Farms, the market. Some of the other flavors I do, they're cool. Earl Grey chocolate's a good one. I do a chili chocolate, which is spicy. I do a lot of different sorbets.
And my sundaes and my cones are such a treat.
I love that ice cream is sweet and cold, and that's a combination that you just, you know, no one's been able to outdo since the beginning of time.
Look for Mr. Softy. S-O-F-T-E-E, Mr. Softy.
So you see, we're really obsessed with Mr. Softy here on Weekday. What are you obsessed with when you're hot and it's summertime? I know it's only 59 degrees out, but you know, Saturday, sunny, yesterday afternoon, sunny, you were probably thinking about something really exciting like Robin, who is emailing from Bristol, Tennessee in Hawaii, shave ice from Matsumoto with red beans and sweetened condensed milk in the lower 48 frozen mango cream bars, like a frozen mango lassi from Trader Joe's. That sounds good. I could have that right now. 206-543-KUOW, 206-543-5869. Yvonne on Eastlake, hi, thanks for joining us. What's your favorite frozen treat? Yvonne?
Oh, hello.
Yes.
Yeah, this is Yvonne from Eastlake. My favorite treat is nieve raspada. I couldn't find it when I first moved to Seattle over 40 years ago. Now I find it all over, known as snow cones. And I have fond memories as a kid. Go visit my grandparents in East El Paso. My grandfather would give me a nickel. I'd walk to the corner store, order a nieve raspada, and get some change back.
What flavor?
Oh, raspberry is my favorite.
That sounds really good to me. So you can find these now here in Seattle?
Pardon?
Can you find them in Seattle now as snow cones?
Yes. Yes. Now you can find snow cones in Seattle. So I'm a happy camper.
Oh, okay. Thanks for your call. Appreciate it. Our phone number, toll-free, 1-800-289-5869, 206-543-5869. Jay on Bainbridge Island, you are a healthy person when it comes to cold treats. Jay? Are you there, Jay? I guess Jay's not there. Jay likes frozen green grapes. Are you there, Jay? No. Frozen green grapes, which sounds like a wonderful thing. I think there's a place on the island of Kauai that I went to that would freeze bananas and then sort of puree them, and that makes a wonderful icy treat. I'm not sure if our phones are totally working or not, but we'll go for the number again, 206-543-KUOW, or you can email us weekday at KUOW. Krisha in Snoqualmie says, growing up in Texas, my mom and her sister would experiment with flavors at the snow cone stand by the local swimming pool. There was always a big jar of pickles there. One day they invented the cherry and pickle juice snow cone. I remember as a kid carrying pickle juice to carnivals and fairs just so we could have our favorite treat. I always get disgusted looks when I mention it. It's the perfect balance of salty and sweet. I'm trying to imagine what a cold pickle might taste like. I like them from the jar, but frozen, why not? Jay on Bainbridge, are you back with us?
I am.
And you like frozen green grapes? Tell me why.
They're like little pieces of green frozen candy, and they're absolutely natural. I don't even have to make them. Somebody else made them. I think some deity up in the sky. Throw them in the freezer and pop them out and eat them one at a time. They're wonderful.
How do you put them in an ice cube tray? How do you do it?
No, you just freeze them on a cookie sheet and then put them in a piece of Tupperware, and they're there. Got to eat them right away.
Because they would thaw right away, right?
You don't want to thaw them. You want to eat them frozen.
And how long does it take for them to freeze?
Oh, I don't know. Hour or two.
Oh, okay. So it's a quick treat. Like I could get home from work, toss them in the freezer, and then make dinner, and they might be ready?
Oh, you can freeze about 50 of them and leave them in the freezer. They keep for a long time.
Well, that sounds great. Thanks for calling in. That's Jay on Bainbridge recommending frozen green grapes. What's your favorite frozen summer treat? 206-543-5869. Warren in Magnolia. Hi. Thanks for joining us.
Hi. Yeah, I just had Thai tea flavored ice cream from the Fremont Market yesterday, and I've been looking for it for a long time, and I finally found it. Absolutely wonderful.
Well,
if you like the beverage, the ice cream is just the same flavor.
Is that made like Vietnamese tea with condensed milk?
Exactly, except in ice cream form.
Huh. And is it, well, I'm trying to imagine it. Is it super sweet in that kind of creamy way that the tea is?
Exactly. They'd made it exactly. If they would have turned the tea into ice cream form, it would have been exactly that, like the exact same flavor. Not too sweet, but the perfect amount of sweetness, and the creaminess is wonderful.
Thai tea ice cream. You got it at the public market, so from a vendor there?
Exactly. Yep. I think the vendor's name was like Pink Ice Cream.
Okay. I think it sounds like we should all be heading out to all our local farmers and public markets, because there's some things that we can't get anywhere else. Thank you for your call. That's Warren and Magnolia recommending frozen Thai tea flavored ice cream. Green tea ice cream I find pretty refreshing as well. From West Seattle, Elisa joins us. Hello, Elisa.
Hello.
And what do you like when it comes to frozen desserts?
Well, my favorite frozen things happen to be Persian. There's a Persian restaurant that I've been going to for about 15 years, and they make a Persian ice cream that's rosewater flavored with chunks of cream in it. But my very favorite is called Falideh, and it's made with little itty-bitty tiny noodles, kind of like top ramen noodles, but super, super skinny.
Uh-huh.
And then they make a rosewater syrup, and they freeze that. So it's kind of a texture like a granita, with these little noodles in it, and then you pour lemon juice on top.
Whoa!
And it's sweet and tart and has that interesting texture, and it's so refreshing and so delicious.
And this Persian restaurant that you've been going to, is it in West Seattle?
It used to be in the U District. Now it's in Bellevue. It's called the Caspian Grill, and they have fabulous food, but the Falideh is my favorite thing.
Okay. Well, wow. Thank you for that is unusual. I have not heard of that before. Thanks for calling. Our phone number, 206-543-5869, 206-543-KUOW. Marianne emails, they are probably made of Hanford-grade radioactive sludge, but it's not summer without an otter pop. My favorite flavor, it's a three-way tie between Sir Isaac Lime, Alexander the Grape, and Little Orphan Orange. Sure, the sharp plastic edges leave you with a child-sized Glasgow smile, but the lips heal quickly and memories live long. Tom writes, I used to go to the local soft-serve frozen yogurt shops fairly regularly, but I just bought a Yonana machine. It looks a little bit like a juicer, but it turns frozen fruit into sorbet. Oh, I need one of those. The result is a delicious, healthy, doesn't need any sugar. I suggested it to a friend whose kids didn't eat fruit, and now they demand it. You can make almost any combination, even savory. I love cucumber, lemon, dill, and tomato basil. I have read about tomato basil frozen treats, and that sounds incredibly sophisticated, but what else would be summer in Seattle without sophisticated taste buds? What do you love when it comes to hot weather? The temperature has inched up over the 60-degree mark right now. We're looking for highs, according to Bernard, who knows these things, of about 72 degrees and sunshine later today. Timothy in Roosevelt, what's your favorite frozen treat?
Oh, frozen custard.
Ah, like as
frozen
in...
Frozen custard as is in, amazing.
Are you calling from Peak's frozen custard by any chance, Timothy?
Yes.
Well,
we
appreciate Peak's. They often bring us special treats during our pledge drive. What flavor do you like in particular?
Well, recently they had black pepper pineapple.
Whoa.
Which was a black pepper custard with a homemade pineapple swirl they did.
So is that sweet and sort of sharp? How does that work?
Oh, it was just great. You could taste the two flavors separately. Like,
wow.
Like you tasted the sweet pineapple, and then it finished with sort of the peppery taste.
Huh.
But they have their other flavors online, which is really fun because you can look and see what's coming up.
And then make your plans about what will be on the menu.
Yep. And then you can sort of decide which day you want to go.
Oh, that's...
And sort of plan your life around it.
I'm planning your life around frozen custard, Timothy. What a wonderful suggestion. Thank you so much for calling. We're talking about your favorite summer treats on this segment of Weekday, and we'd love to hear from you. What says summer to you? Maybe it is an otter pop or something more sophisticated, like frozen pineapple black pepper custard, which I... think I have to try that. 206-543-5869. Linda says, although it's not as classic as Mr. Softy, the best for taste and price in my book, the ice cream bars from Costco, premium vanilla ice cream dipped in warm chocolate, rolled in chopped almonds. It's delicious and it's cheap, including tax. So what could be better than that? What's a summer to you, Amy, on Finney Ridge? Thanks for being with us.
Oh, for me, I love going up to the Stony Goat Bistro and getting a root beer float because they make their own root beer.
What kind of ice cream? Vanilla?
Yeah, it's house-made vanilla ice cream, so it's really super creamy, custardy. Fantastic.
And have you been eating root or drinking? I'm not sure what the verb is. Have you been consuming root beer floats since childhood?
Yeah, it's been my favorite dessert ever since a child.
Yeah, that sounds delicious. Thank you for calling in. That's Amy on Finney. Root beer floats were something that my father really loved when I was little as well. So that does say summer to me, although they weren't as fancy as the ones that Amy's describing. Arnold in West Seattle, you're on the air. Your favorite frozen summer treat?
Saturday, for the first time, I had a fabulous sorbet. It was sweet, lemon with mint, and I think basil.
Wow. Where did you make it?
A friend made it. It was all infused, so it didn't have any specks in it, you know? Mm-hmm. Nothing to ruin the sweet, liquidy, cool flavor. But I've never had anything as good before.
Oh, that sounds wonderful to me. That sounds incredibly refreshing.
It was fabulous. In fact, when they delivered it, you know, poured it out for guests at a party, you said, oh, yeah, it's non-alcoholic because it is so full of flavor, taste alcoholic, but it's not.
Wow. Well, you could probably get high on the taste itself, it sounds like. Thanks for calling in. That was Arnold in West Seattle. We go now to Olympia, where Mark joins us. Hi, Mark. And you have another classic frozen summer treat you want to talk about.
I do, yeah. It's called the Boston Cooler, but the folks out here on the West Coast have never really heard, not many people have heard of it out here.
I know, that's true. You want to explain what a Boston Cooler is?
Well, I'm originally from the Detroit area of Michigan.
Me too. I think it should be, yeah, it's Verner's, right?
The Verner's, just the only ginger ale there is. And so you get some Verner's ginger ale and some vanilla ice cream, you put it in the blender, and you blend it up. And really, that's it. Just a Verner smoothie with vanilla ice cream.
You know, Mark, I drank those, too. I'd have to tell you, I am from Detroit. I went to Verner's Elementary School, where instead of milk, they gave us Verner's ginger ale. So,
oh, no way. That's great.
Well, yeah, probably not. It probably stunted my growth. I probably would have been 6 feet tall without that elementary school. But, yes, can you find Verner's ginger ale here?
I think you can get it. I don't really know where offhand, but something tells me I've seen it somewhere. But it's easier to find some type of a good ginger ale out here and just do that, I suppose. But I don't remember last time I saw Verner's on the shelves out here.
Well, hopefully one of our listeners will email in and let us know. Thank you. That is my remembrance of summer. That was Mark and Olympia talking about a Boston Cooler. And the reason that Verner's ginger ale is so special is that it's so sharp that it kind of goes right up your nose and the bubbles hurt. We have this email from Susan who says, in the late 1950s, a favorite for kids at the Army-Navy Country Club in Arlington, Virginia, was frozen Milky Way bars. We would kill for them. My taste has changed now. Iced tea will do the trick on a hot day. Nan in Shoreline writes, as a kid, I loved those little cups that had orange sherbet on one side, vanilla on the other. They came with a little flat wooden spoon. As an adult, the vanilla flavor from Peake's frozen custard. A lot of folks writing in about and calling in about Peake's frozen custard in the Roosevelt neighborhood. It is pretty creamy and delicious, it's true, but so are many frozen things. Sharon on Finney Ridge, thank you for joining us. Your favorite frozen summer treat? Sharon?
Oh, yeah. Well, nowadays I just have one of those 40-calorie fudgesicles, but when I was a kid, Fred Nelson used to make an Olympic berry sherbet that was really good. Mm. They had Frango ice cream. But my mom would bring home this Olympic berry sherbet, and it came in a roll, and you could slice it off and have a disc for dinner. It was really good. I don't think they make it anymore, but it was wonderful.
Wow. A disc of sherbet sounds so sophisticated. That was after you ate dinner, though, right?
Exactly right, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Well, thanks for calling, Sharon. Really appreciate it. Our phone number, 206-543-KUOW. John on Capitol Hill, you want us to travel for a great frozen treat, right?
Absolutely. It's called Zablioni Semifreddo, and it's in Rome, north of the Piazza della Rotunda, otherwise known as the Pantheon, in a little place called, well, in English, it's the Snowflake. And it's Zablioni pudding, which is often served warm, but in this case, they've mixed it with a cream and served it like an ice cream, and it is sheer heaven.
Zablioni has a kind of wine in it, doesn't it?
It's got Marsala, egg white, and sugar, and it's whipped up for about 20 minutes to a half an hour. It's a very labor-intensive pudding.
I have seen recipes for it, but I'm wondering if part of the charm of this dessert from you comes from the fact that you were consuming it in Rome.
Well, that helps. That certainly helps.
Well, thank you. You're giving me, you know, like the little wanderlust taste there, John. Appreciate it. Zablioni from Rome near the Pantheon. We go from there to Renton, where, Greg, you have something that would be much easier for us to find, right?
Yeah, mine is not a world traveler. But I grew up loving the orange creamsicle. But my, you know, like I say, I grew up. So now my tastes are a little bit of whipped vodka and Pellegrino orange soda water.
Wow.
And tastes exactly like the creamsicle if you mix them right.
Wow.
It takes a little experimenting, but you get it right, you get the creamsicle.
Hmm. Thank you for that. All these calls are making me both thirsty and hungry. We were talking about Werner's Ginger Ale. John, who says he's from Boston, never heard of a Boston cooler. John, I'm suspecting that it's something that Detroiters created so that we would try to sound very sophisticated. Both Tim and Sue tell us that we can find Werner's Ginger Ale at QFC. I hope that's true. I'm going to go out and look for it, although I don't actually drink soda anymore, but it's bringing up memories. And Diane in Shoreline writes, and this is the last one, this weekend I prepared rhubarb sorbet with strawberry sauce, rhubarb sorbet with candied ginger and strawberry chunks, watermelon lemonade sorbet, and the hit of the weekend, chocolate hazelnut ice cream. All were eaten happily, I bet. And I used a lot of our garden's rhubarb. I love preparing our own sorbets and ice cream. It is easy and it is fun. We are expecting weather where you might want to eat some frozen treats. But for now, I'll just say that we're going to get serious in the next hour. We're going to talk about Egypt. We're going to talk about reflections on being human. And we're going to give you a little rundown of the new state laws that have taken effect. I'm Marcy Silman. That's all coming up on Weekday. Enjoy your ice cream.
I got brain freeze, Marcy.
Yep. And now, the sound of the day. That sound. Marianne and Dave sent us that sound, an occasional accompaniment to their hiking trip in the upper Engadin region of the Swiss Alps, the southeastern part of Switzerland. It's a herd of cows wearing cowbells grazing on a mountainside. And it says summer to them because the sweet grass improves dairy products. Everything is expensive in Switzerland except for cheese. What interesting sounds do you hear? Record 30 seconds and send the sound to us along with the story behind the sound. Maybe it's from Switzerland. Maybe it's from Shoreline. Email your audio file to weekday@kuow.org and include sound of the day in the subject line.
Thanks for listening. The program you just heard was made possible by the financial support of our listeners. Support this program and others like it by making a pledge today at kuow.org.